Welcome to Talking Supply Chain. In each episode, top supply chain industry professionals and the nation's top thought leaders join host Brian Strait and share their unique insights to help supply chain managers stay one step ahead of their competition. This is Talking Supply Chain. Hello, and welcome to Talking Supply Chain. My name is Brian Strait, and today we are going to focus on the latest challenges to sales and operations planning professionals. Our guest today is Benjamin Sellers, a business advisor with Oliver White, which is a global leader in helping companies better organize their business processes. Ben has worked with clients across many industries, including Avon, General Mills, Corona, New Balance, DuPont, and many others. He has extensive experience in the make-to-stock as well as make-to-order and engineer-to-order business models from his experience at Caterpillar, and has been helping companies achieve better business outcomes in the areas of integrated business planning, demand planning, master scheduling, and lean manufacturing. Ben, welcome and thank you to the podcast today.
Thanks, Brian. Thanks for having me.
To get started, I was wondering if you could tell our audience a little bit more about yourself and the work that you're doing at Oliver White.
Yeah, thank you. I've been with Oliver White now for almost 20 years. I can't believe it's gone by so fast. And predominantly helped companies with this process called integrated business planning or sales and operations planning, as you refer to it. And really been involved in over 100 implementations of helping companies stand this process up. So it's something I have a lot of passion for. I also lead our public class on integrated business planning or sales and operations planning, which we just had last week. Went real well. So we teach those several times a year, and spent almost 10 years on our leadership team as part of Oliver White as well.
Yeah. So to get into it here, I mentioned sales and operations planning in our opening, and I think people are very familiar with sales and operations planning, but at Oliver White, you tend to refer to this as integrated business planning or IBP. So for our audience, of my own knowledge, because I'm curious about this myself, can you kind of clarify what integrated business planning is and how that differs from what we traditionally know as S&OP?
Absolutely. And I think it's worth noting that the name sales and operations planning is the name we actually came up with back in the 80s when we invented this process. We published it in the first book called Orchestrating Success. And so we have a long history with sales and operations planning as part of that. And then, recently we moved to integrated business plan because we just thought it was a better description of what the process is really trying to do. Before I differentiate it, I will say there are probably companies out there doing sales and operations planning that might have some of the characteristics of integrated business planning and likewise. So sometimes the words get in the way. Mm-hmm. But think about integrated planning as a more advanced form of sales and operations planning. So in many companies or in many places today, first of all, sales and operations planning is often referred to as a supply chain process. And I think this is incredibly misleading. Companies that do this well and best practices, companies use this to run their businesses. It's not something assigned to supply chain to do. And some of the main differences that would differentiate these processes would be the integration of portfolio. When I think about all my experience working with companies, the most common what is missing is the integration of changes to portfolio, even as a step. So we promote that as a step. That would be one difference. The second is how deeply the financials are integrated into the process. Unfortunately, many processes today that are running under the name of sales and operations and planning are volume only. There's no financials that are part of that at all. Finance is off doing completely their own independent planning process. And of course, the goal here under integrated business planning is to integrate all the planning functions into a single integrated plan or range of plans that we can scenario plan against. There's also another big differentiator, which is around strategy. A lot of people have left this important piece out, but to have the strategy execution embedded into your process makes it much more powerful, much more relevant, and helps you really extend the horizon, understand what's out in front of you. And that's another big difference. You see a lot of people with what I call telescoping processes, where they're just running to the end of the year, and every month they get closer to the end of the year, this process gets shorter and shorter and shorter in the horizon. Of course, best practice across both sales and operations planning and integrated business planning is a minimum of a 2-year rolling horizon. It's a whole different mindset than the budget-based mindset of planning are big pieces of this, followed with scenario planning. So realizing that one outcome is not very realistic. You know, there are a range of outcomes that could be happening as we're planning and looking over the future. And scenario planning is the whole process around managing that risk and understanding the many different realities that could play out and how we might be prepared given any range of possibilities that could be in the future.
Yeah. So really big picture kind of approach here. So when you're looking at this, you're kind of looking in an IBP process, you're kind of looking at everything, right? So I assume that gives you a much broader enterprise-wide perspective on business planning, which I think is probably good. But we hear a lot about how difficult it can be to integrate change in an S&OP operation currently. So when you adopt an IBP approach to this, does that complicate this further as you try to bring in all these other segments of the business and actually get something accomplished?
You know, I think we have to be careful with this, because what I find in companies that have, you know, not as strong of processes is that it compounds your challenges by not having the scope or completeness of the process. So, for example, if you're not integrating strategy into your S&OP process or your IBP process, then you could easily make decisions that are under maybe financial pressure for the short term to do something that's contrary to your overall strategy. It would be easy to make those kinds of decisions and trade-offs, maybe not on purpose, right? Just looking out for the short-term best thing we could do. So having this as part of that can be really helpful to eliminate confusion and some of this. But change is hard, right? Getting people to all work on the same page, it's much easier for us all just to disagree and do our own planning independently of each other. But that has dire consequences in your business. When I've seen that go bad, it goes really bad. Yeah. And so it's like having a high-performance team, if you've ever been part of those in your work experience. They're hard to sustain. It's hard to put in place. But they're very powerful. When you have that in place, it has tremendous benefit to the company and to people personally that are part of it. And so I'd like to say that IBP helps you solve problems, helps you get ahead of things and reduce the amount of chaos that you have in your business. Because so much of the chaos we create ourselves through lack of communication and lack of good information and just lack of planning in general. And so typically it's just the opposite. And, you know, an example of that is a lot of times we explain to people the steps of the process. They say, wow, it sounds like a lot of meetings. I go, really? Think about all the meetings you have today where you have the wrong people with the wrong agenda without the decision makers. And, you know, you meet each other in the hallway and say, well, did you hear what Bob said and what he wanted to do? And the next thing you know, you've had four or five meetings without the right players, without the right things. And eventually someone goes up to someone that's at a vice president level and to get what they want done. So it becomes a very ad hoc process. It's always more time consuming and always harder and less productive, I think, than we have this process in place.
Yeah. For those of us that had little kids, my kids are older now, but this sounds a lot like trying to convince them why we have to go to the grocery store every week instead of the food just magically appearing in the cabinet.
Right.
So, following up on that point, it's like you got to get everybody on board for this in order to develop the successful IBP plan. So that's complicated enough. You touched on that. But in today's world, you're also facing a lot of external challenges, disruptions to supply chain. I think everybody knows what I'm talking about there. Might be your suppliers or operations further down the line that maybe you don't know, didn't know about. So, you know, in an IBP plan, can you plan for these? I mean, is that a possibility to plan for what the reality of the world is?
Well, to some extent, yes. There's always going to be something that you can't see coming. And we've had quite a lot of that lately, haven't we, over the last few years?
Yeah.
Just a whole litany of things that no one could have probably 100% seen coming. And I just want to make one comment on the last question before I go into this around the internal part of it. You know, the biggest mistake I see people make that makes this even harder is they jump in when they're implementing this and they just go into implementing the mechanics of each step. As opposed to stepping back and saying, you know, we've got to get everybody on board. We've got to get our leadership team engaged. We've got to make a case for why this is important for us to do at the business. And that helps so much, educating people on what the process is, how it should be, what the benefits are going to be getting out of it is really important, regardless of whether you're just going for sales and operations planning or full-blown integrated business planning. Yeah. But in terms of this, you know, I think of a word that comes to mind that's being used a lot today called resilience. And I see people look at this and they say, you know, I'm planning for, you know, in a demand plan for it to be 100. It's not going to be 100. You know, and people keep talking about how the world is getting more and more unpredictable. But I think they're missing the whole point. Is the point here is not 100% accuracy, because it's a fallacy. You'll never get that level of accuracy. Imagine you're in a business that is predominantly driven by weather, like hurricanes. Like, take a roofing business, a roofing manufacturing business. Right? Tell me how many hurricanes we're going to have this year, and I can tell you what my demand's going to be. Roughly speaking, a hurricane in the roofing business is, you know, 40, 50 days of production time. Yeah. You don't get 40, 50 days notice on a hurricane, so you can't wait for it to happen, yeah. Right? So this whole discussion is about risk. How do we manage risk in the business? So there's a range of possibilities. We could have no hurricanes, or we could have 5 hurricanes. If I plan for 0 hurricanes and there's 5, I miss that opportunity on that upside because I won't be able to do it. If I plan for 5 and there's 0, I've got lots of inventory. By the way, this is why executives are paid so much money, because they have so much at stake. But the best companies use this to look at a range of possibilities and understand what it could mean to the business. So, for example, if we turn, and most companies are a little bit risk adverse, I think. So let's say we try to go with the 0 hurricane scenario. What that whole discussion could drive in a business is, well, maybe we can get the business later. What if we got a whole bunch of tarps? Tarps aren't expensive, and we can go and cover those roofs and brand them with our logo of our company, and then get them to sign up for the roofing. So we find a way to protect them right away, faster than anybody else could, and then we grab that business when we do catch up. Right? Would be an example. It's not a perfect strategy, but it is the example of the type of thought that would go into a range of planning. So it's about us being aligned about the direction. The worst thing that can happen in companies is where, you know, people are not aligned across all the different functions. And when they are reacting to these things, they're doing it in a non-aligned way. And a lot of this gets back to how people are measured, how they're incentivized and rewarded in the business as well. And so it's a fascinating topic. I will tell you that the majority of problems today in companies are not all from this. A lot of it's just basic blocking tackling. Like in a consumer packaged goods, I didn't know, you know, we've known we were going to run that promotion with Walmart for a year, but no one happened to tell anybody. So when it happened, no one was ready for it. It wasn't in the demand plans, therefore it wasn't in the supply plans. Yeah. And so all there's a lot of behavioral components of this as well that are really important to do that. But if you do get caught completely off guard, I believe, and it's been proven, that integrated business planning can help you do a better job of managing through these things if you follow the steps of it well.
Yeah. And I think that answer, what you just said, is probably a podcast by itself. digging into that a little more. We're not going to dive into that so much deeply today, because I think I wanted to give people a good overview of what IBP really is and why it's valuable. But I think there's a lot more there, and maybe somewhere down the line we can revisit that particular question.
It's one of my favorite topics.
As you talked about that too, I'm going to surprise people here and say, do you remember COVID? Yeah, COVID happened, right? We all remember that. And then the last few years, I think a lot of people, planners, especially supply chain people, planners, have kind of said, well, when we get back to normal. And now maybe they're sitting there saying, oh, we're finally back to normal, right? Or whatever that normal looked like for them prior to that. But, you know, as we're kind of transitioning into this post-COVID world, right, at this point, I wonder, from an S&OP and or an IBP perspective, should we go back to normal, right? Should we go back to the ways that we did things, you know, with our tested S&OP processes? Or is it time to kind of say, hey, let's throw out this blueprint, let's start again, especially what we've learned the last couple of years with the fragility of the supply chain? Should we go back, or should we use this as an opportunity to move forward?
Yeah, absolutely. You should use it as an opportunity to move forward. And I, you know, this might be a little rough to say, but I think if you were doing sales and operations planning and you abandon it during COVID because you didn't feel that process worked or suited your needs, it probably wasn't that good of a process to start with. You know, yeah. just to be a little bit bold there, because I know of many companies that use the process very effectively during COVID to work through the lack of supply and all the challenges that went with them, because they already had all the things in place they needed in terms of a process to work through that. So many of the processes were fragile anyway. People were just going through the motions, the mechanics of the process, not really looking at it in the right way, and so it quote unquote broke. And so should you throw it away? I think you should not ever throw anything completely away, but you should definitely learn from why wasn't it resilient enough? Why wasn't it good enough to work through this thing? Because something like COVID could happen again, you know, with all the turmoil in the world right now, you know, you could probably anticipate a few scenarios around things you might need to be prepared for as a business, depending on what kind of industry and whatnot you're in. But that's kind of the way I see it. If anything, it should convince companies that they need to improve their supply chains. And what I find, to be quite honest, there would be characteristics of these companies. Number one, the processes probably weren't documented. They were probably run off the, you know, just a few key people that knew how to do key things. And maybe those people left during that time. And so many companies put all of the responsibility of running IBP or S&OP on their supply chain organization to begin with. So I would guess there would also been lack of participation from the commercial organization, lack of participation in this process from the finance organization. Some of the things we talked about at the very beginning as we're differentiating between S&OP and integrated business planning, I think you would have find many of those shortcomings there. Perhaps not in every case, but my experience is that's where a lot of it was. The process wasn't that great to begin with. So yeah, let's do something new. Let's do something different. Let's make it better.
Yeah. And getting into that, like better, right? That better concept. One of the main tenets of S&OP was it's planning, right? And so we would sit down and we'd build a plan for 12 months or 24 months, depending on how your company operated, or maybe even both. And that would be it, right? And then 12 months later, you sit back, hey, what worked, what didn't work? Let's do this again. But that's not exactly how IBP works, right? I mean, there is some planning. There is some long-range planning as part of it. But it's a constantly updating process along the way, you know, whether it's daily, weekly, what have you. Can you explain how that works and the benefits of doing it that way?
Absolutely. I mean, the thing I think about with a budgeting process, which is the annual planning process. So the day that thing is published, it's obsolete. That's the problem with it. And so let's say you've moved through time, 30 days since it was published, maybe 60 days, and it's not going as planned. Maybe sales are a lot higher. Maybe you've got supply chain issues. Maybe sales are a lot lower. Maybe there's an inventory correction happening as we bounce through this COVID era out of it. All those kinds of things, you need a process that allows you to resynchronize and reprioritize everybody across the company to what you should be doing now. Let's take there's an example of a company I worked with very, very recently where there was too much inventory in the channel and they started drawing that down. And so the salespeople went out and talked to them and says, oh yeah, we've got about 60 days too much of inventory. We're making a correction. So under that 60 days from now, you should probably see things come back up. The problem was nobody communicated that to operations. And day by day, they're saying, well, gosh, we didn't get the orders today. Let's send the people home. They're off on their own coming up with their own strategy for this. And the worst thing that could happen is about the time you do a layoff is about all the times this thing corrects and you need all those people right back. And that's the kind of stuff you see happen when people aren't really synchronized in their planning. Trust me, it's much harder not to do this than to do this. That's the fallacy a lot of the stuff. So we don't have the time or all the stuff to do it. And like, I guarantee you're spending the time on it. It's just not the best stuff for your company. And so, you know, we really believe that the best practice horizon is a minimum of 2 years. Because inside of 2 years, this is, you know, ask somebody, what does it take to put in a new asset or capacity or some major change in their business? And you get to 2 years sometimes very, very quickly. Sometimes you get out much farther than that. And that's the reason we say a minimum of 2 years. If you're a pharmaceutical industry, you probably need to be out 5 to 7 years because the cycles of development and everything else to get the process going. So it's not like people don't need this information to make decisions, right? But this is the process in between those budgeting cycles where you're looking at how we're doing, what's changed in the last 30 days, what should we do about it? Whatever those gaps and those things that are coming up through it, what should we do about it? And then we're going to resynchronize all the priorities, all the plans across the whole business through this formal process. To do it some other way is ad hoc at best and sometimes goes really, really wrong. Unfortunately, that's why, you know, where a lot of our business comes from is people that are at the end of the rope. They are stuck. You know, we finally realize we need to do something different. And that's where they start down this journey. Unfortunately, there's very few of them that say, we just want to be better.
Well, don't give away all your secrets, right? If everybody does this really well, you guys won't be needed, right?
You know, we keep saying that, but it doesn't seem to happen that way. And so many things are always changing in the marketplace and in companies. And I think that's probably the weakness is companies aren't documenting their processes, especially these really important ones. And as there's turnover and change, these processes atrophy as a result. And so it has happened where people had a very high performing process at one point in time. And due to leadership changes or other changes in the business, or maybe they were bought and sold, it atrophies. And they may be back at it starting all over again. So unfortunately, that's the case. We don't like to see that happen, but it unfortunately happens a lot more.
Yeah. And my next question, you've touched on this and you touched on it a little bit in that answer too, I think. But you know, I think many organizations view an approach like this, that's something they just don't have time for. And you made the point that you actually have more time for this than you do the current process you're probably using. But in the case of IBP, you're talking about getting multiple departments or business units involved in this process. It's hard enough to get six people around a conference table to decide on one thing, let alone six departments with 50, 60, 70, 100 people, whatever in the department. But you're talking about change on a regular basis. I mean, I've heard stories of S&OP leaders say, hey, we wanted to make a change in a vendor. We couldn't get finance on board with doing that. It took us 6 months to do it, kind of process. So, but if I'm understanding, you know, what you're saying and this process correctly, changes like that would happen a little more quickly and on a more regular basis. So how do you bring all these people together? What advice do you have to say, hey, how do we get all these different departments, all these different leaders involved in this process?
Yeah, I hear about this all the time. I've been, you know, like I said, over the last 20 years working with clients and teaching companies how to do this process and the best practices. I come across many companies and I'll say, how long have you been at this? They're like, well, we've been trying to implement it for 5 years. I'm like, really? For 5 years? And you still don't have leadership engaged and you still don't have your commercial organization engaged. So it's really all on supply chain. Right? Yeah. Why do you think, I know why, but I'm asking them, why do you think that is? And it's because everyone misses the very critical steps because they think they don't have time to do it. And that is, you must engage your leadership team. You must make a case for why this would be worth their time and attention. This is not a supply chain process. This is a process to run the business. You're talking about changes to portfolio. It's a demand-driven process. I don't know how you can do this without your commercial organization, right? There's nobody that knows what's going on should be nobody else that knows better what's going on in your marketplace than your commercial organization, your marketing teams. They're what starts the whole process off. But that's where it gets complicated. That's why you have to start with the leadership team. And the other thing is you should get everybody on the same page. When we say the words, whatever words you want to use, sales and operations planning, integrated business planning, everybody actually knows what those words mean. It's so many times it's like saying the word green, you know, and you might be thinking about golf. Somebody else might be thinking of the environment when they hear that word. People can be thinking about all kinds of things from just those words, and the words get in the way. You got to get past the words saying we're going to do this, and you actually have to say, this is what it does. This is how it should operate. You should do this well up in front of trying to stand up a demand review. You will never get your commercial organization or any part of the organization really excited about it it's easy to get supply excited about because nobody else will do it. They have to, right? They have to. And that's the reason why it ends up there. And it's what stuff rolls downhill. So that's a really important piece of this is to really drive the change. You have to do that. The next thing you have to do is you have to really think about who you want to put in these roles as you structure the process, which is another thing I like to do with the leadership team, because you're trying to solve problems. So many of these processes today are nothing more than KPI report outs. They're not making decisions. They're not bringing leadership teams what they need in order to do to be better leaders and lead the company better. And so there's lots of deficiencies in what these very nuanced kinds of things are, where people think they understand what the process is, but they really don't know how to extract the full value out of it. They're going through the motions as opposed to really doing it in the right way. Yeah. And I always have a call out for this guy. I really, really like his books. This guy named Patrick Lencioni. Because he published the book, The Five Dysfunctions of a Team. And whenever I've seen a IBP process or an S&OP process performing at a high level, it's because of the things he writes about in his book, right? Yep. So I tell people 70% of doing this process well is all people. It's not technology. It's not process. You need those things, but it's all about people. You need people in this process that can solve business problems, that are change agents. You have to seed it with the right kinds of future leaders for your company. Is just so, so important. If you're really trying to drive change, you can't just treat it as a reporting process as you go through with it. So hopefully that's helpful. Yeah, there's a lot into there.
I think he's probably underselling if there's only five dysfunctions on a team. But, has it become easier, though? I mean, for you guys, especially as you work with companies, has it become easier to get upper management engaged these days? Because, I mean, look, before COVID, I think there were probably a bunch of CEOs that didn't even know they had supply chains in their business.
You know, it has been easier and easier because so many of the supply chains broke so badly. They knew they needed help. And when they went and asked for help, you know, and this is not a new process. This is considered a best practice. Companies go look at it, so you don't have it, so you should have it. But you have to take it further than that to really try and do that. Some of the things that we like to try and do with clients is actually go through and look at how they're planning and try and turn it into financial, real business terms of what this means. When I sit down with a CEO, I say, what would have to be different for this to be worth your while? And I have one I remember still very clearly to this day. And he said, well, Ben, if we're talking North America, what it would need to be is right now we were just acquired, so we can't invest any capital. So within my existing cap, we have a growing business. Is how much inventory should I be carrying? What kind of schedule should I be working in my factory? How can I really put this plan together, balancing the inventory and the workforce? Mm-hmm. And fundamentally, that's what S&OP and IBP do. And I said, well, that should be no problem for us at all. You see, so many companies look at all this stuff as a single variable problem. We've got to drive down inventory. We've got to drive down cost. And IBP allows you to look at all those variables together so there's not any unintended consequences to your decisions as best you can. You know, every cycle, you're just trying to make it a little less wrong and trying to get a little bit better at how you're planning and executing. And that's what's so wonderful about it is you've got all these learning cycles to learn from and to really tune in your plans to where they need to be with the world that's just constantly changing. If the world never changed, you could just set a budget and just execute to it. But that's not the world we live in anymore, if we ever had that world. So IBP is a change management process. It's the whole reason it exists is because things are volatile and because the future is not what we think it's going to be. So we are continually replanning and readjusting. But if you do it every month, you're not making big adjustments. You're making course corrections as opposed to wholesale big changes to the business. And so many companies today are on quarterly or when they're really syncing across the whole company, they may be doing it quarterly at best, except for those that are using IBP very effectively.
Yeah. I have that same problem in my own life, right? I mean, look at a room. It's like, okay, we're going to clean the room this week. And it's like, well, cleaning the room is a big project. But if I just clean the desk, I can get that done, right?
Right.
So when I try to clean the room, it's like it just gets put off and put off and put off and never gets done. So it's the same thing. We shifting is just a little bit. You know, we always talk about people. I mean, there's lots of books and studies on traits of highly successful people. And I assume that companies are the same way, right? So in your experience, and as you've worked with companies, the companies that have been very successful implementing IBP, have you identified like common traits among those businesses that helps them be successful?
We have. And I'll tell you, it's not going to be any surprise based on how this conversation is going, is one of the big traits is the leadership team is engaged.
Yeah.
We believe that, you know, whoever the most senior person is ahead of the commercial organization, that should be the person that owns and is in charge of the demand review. The most senior leader that's in charge of the portfolio, that's the one that should be running the portfolio review step, and on and on and on. That is just so critical. We actually tell companies, if you can't get your leadership team excited, I don't even know why you would start it. You certainly wouldn't hire a consulting company because you'd just be wasting a lot of money. Either way, it's going to be a hard road to go down if you go that way. And those are the companies that have been at it for 5 years that still don't truly have the engagements, don't really truly have the process in place. Yeah. They're forcing it to happen in the company. Because if that doesn't do what they're doing right there, there's just at such a disadvantage in the supply organization to get things done. So that is probably the biggest trait that we see in companies that are successful is an engaged and supportive leadership team that's willing to change. The biggest behavior change every company has to go through to do this process well is one around building trust, which is back to the Patrick Lencioni. Because in most companies, the reason things aren't working well is because people don't trust each other. Right? There's a reason there's 10 different sets of numbers in this company, right? If we use sales numbers, you know what happened? If we use the, you know, everybody can say this about everybody. I'm not picking on sales, right? But, and we're a product of how we're measured, right? So the next piece of this that I think is really important is people aren't afraid to look beyond just supply, demand, and finance. They're sitting there going, you know, tell me how you measure people, and I will tell you how they will behave. So if you measure your operations folks on nothing but cost, you know, not service, just cost, you know, are they in the cost targets? They're going to sub-optimize for cost. If you measure your salespeople on just how much they oversell the plan, you're pretty much telling them, please, you know, you're incentivizing them to sandbag. And so you want to really think through your whole incentive and reward structures and that they really align your strategies. So many companies have us fight against each other. We've created our own battles and strife. And so many times when companies first start in this, this is some of the first things they go after, is to get reality in the numbers, to get alignment around incentives and rewards, so that we're working as one team, really trying to work collaboratively together. And that's where that integrated, we put that word integrated in integrated business planning, because it's not apparent enough in the sales and operations planning. Not that it's not the intent of sales and operations planning as well, but we thought it would be much more strongly pronounced if it was right in the title of the process. And of course, sales and operations is just part of it. You know, S&OP, if we wanted to put every acronym out there, every letter to represent every function, you'd have to have an F in there for finance. You'd have to have an I for inventory. You have to go M for marketing, on and on and on and on. All the attributes of it, it's just not there. So integrated business planning, we thought, really, really best illustrated that point.
Yeah, you're so right about that too, because I mean, even in my field, I mean, I'm a journalist by trade. And years ago, I worked for a company that the journalists, the editors, and the reporters, we had incentives for certain things. You know, we did, you know, did X number of page views or whatever, you got bonuses, right? But those were in contradiction to what the sales team had. So if we were doing our stuff and meeting our objectives, that was hurting the sales team's ability to sell. And the same thing for them. You know, what they were able to sell, what they were incentivized to sell, hurt our editorial product. Right, so we weren't working together as a single unit. We were working against each other, and the result was obviously was not good when it was all said and done.
Some of this is so nuanced as well. I think of a cell phone company that made these cases, protective cases, and there was a lady that was there as a demand planner, and we're going through the demand plans for the iPhone launch for the fall for Walmart, and I was like, so why is this launch plan 3 times higher than any prior launch plan you've ever had? And she says, well, this is the request of the customer. And I go, but do they actually take everything they ask for? They go, well, no, not really. They don't really take everything they ask for. And I go, well, let me ask it to you this way. Are you also committing to 3 times the revenue and profit for this iPhone launch? Well, of course not. I'm like, there's the disconnect that a lot of people don't realize around the power of integrated business planning and the power of the integration. I don't want finance to be a separate planning function and on a separate timeline. I want it all to happen right there together. And that demand review, we're talking volume, margin, and revenue all together, because it's a much different, richer conversation. And imagine if that's happening across the entire product line, which it was, and all their customers, which it was, and how the impact that had on supply chain. They're completely unrealistic numbers that were going to supply chain, and they threw them all away and came with their own set of numbers.
And so a lot of wasted time, a lot
huge
of wasted
cost.
Resources.
This is a business too, where the 60% lifetime revenue is in the first like 90 days after product launch. Right.
Yeah.
There's no room for error in this kind of business, in many businesses. So being aligned on this stuff is really, really important. And this is a process that can help, if your business is growing, can help you scale. Right. This is a process to help you grow your business.
Yeah. So I want to squeeze in one last question here.
Of course.
Because I like it. We've talked a lot, and I talked to a lot of guests on here, and we always talk, you know, in theory, and some examples come up along the way. But I was wondering if you could take what you've kind of talked about today and put that into a concrete example, you know, something that actually you guys worked on maybe that took the company, implemented this process, and you ended up with a better outcome as a result of that.
Yeah, I have lots of examples. It was kind of hard for me to sit here and think about one for you, but you know, there's one that really comes to mind. I think it really illustrates the power of the process, and it's really relevant for these COVID times that we've been in, where we were constrained. And there's a best practice in integrated business planning, especially on the demand planning side, that says we think about unconstrained demand, right? And the whole purpose of this philosophy is so that we aren't too quick to say we can't supply it. And here's an example. This is a true story. And if this precedent hadn't been in place, they would have constrained the demand. They would have constrained it, right? So the sales team came and said, here's what we can sell. There was not capacity to be able to make it. But instead of constraining the demand plan, they said, what would it take? What would it cost? And how much time would you need? You can't just come in here and say no. And this is the thought behind unconstrained. So they did that. It was about $34 million worth of revenue in a roughly $1 billion business. So it was significant, but it wasn't a huge number. So they went back through it. They went and said, well, it's these mixing tanks that are the constraint. We have 2 mixing tanks, but we only have 1 mixing impeller. What does a brand new mixing impeller cost? It costs $50,000. And this is the way it went to the leadership team, is would you be willing to spend $50,000 of unbudgeted capital to get $34 million in revenue? Tell me a business leader that wouldn't say yes almost immediately to that. There's not many things sitting around that have that kind of return on it. That's a real story. That really happened. They would have flushed away $34 million had they not had this process in place, because they would have just did what they always did. Said, no, we don't have the capacity to do it. And they wouldn't have had this process to escalate it up to the leadership team the way it did to get authorized capital allocated to it, and they went and did it, and they were very successful. It's a no-brainer, and there's just the way I talked about this, how you have to put things together for this process to be successful, or just like this. Yeah. And just be able to talk to your leaders how they make decisions in financial terms.
Right, because the operations guy looks at it and says, well, I don't have the $50,000 in my budget, so we can't do
right.
it.
Right,
right. Right, and sales never knows that they're missing this.
Right. Correct. It can happen completely under the radar of the leadership team. And many companies is probably happening right now where these kinds of things. Think of IBP as a formal way to escalate issues from down in your organization to your leadership team that are worthy of their time.
Yep.
And there's all the value you need to know. If you do that well, you'll have lots of stories in your business around how it's had a positive impact on it. And that's the reason we get so many leaders of companies that go to new companies, and that's the first thing they ask for. And why so much of our business comes through referrals like that is because they know it works, and it's been really helpful to a lot of people in their careers as business leaders.
Yep. Well, Ben, thank you very much for the time today. Appreciate you kind of explaining this process to us a little bit. If people want to know more, maybe they want to, you know, have a conversation about whether they're doing it correctly or not. How might they get in touch with you or Oliver White?
Well, you can always get in touch with us on our website, or you can contact me directly through my email at ben.sellers@oliverwhite.com.
Great. Great. Thank you. That's all the time we have today. I want to thank Oliver White's Benjamin Sellers for speaking with us today. Greatly enjoyed the conversation. Greatly appreciated his time. Special thank you to all of you out there listening today as well. Greatly appreciate you spending time with us today. For Supply Chain Management Review and the Talking Supply Chain Podcast, I'm Brian Strait. Thank you for listening.
Thanks, Brian.
Talking Supply Chain is produced by Supply Chain Management Review and Peerless Media. You can find it on scmr.com, supplychain247.com, iTunes, Google Podcasts, or wherever you find your podcasts. For more information on this topic or to sign up for our weekly newsletter, a print or a digital subscription to our publication, visit scmr.com. We hope you will join us for our next episode. For Supply Chain Management Review, I'm Brian Strait, and thank you for listening.